Chapter 5. When the elevator reached the sixth story, Klaus bade goodbye to Violet and stepped out into the long, empty hallway. The hallway was lined with numbered doors, odd numbers on one side and even numbers on the other, and large ornamental vases, too large to hold flowers and too small to hold spies. On the floor was a smooth, grey carpet that muffled each of the middle Baudelaire's uncertain steps. Although Klaus had never set foot in the Hotel des Neumonts before today, walking down the hallway gave him a familiar feeling. It was the feeling he had whenever he entered a library with an important problem to solve, suspecting that somewhere within the library's collection of books was the perfect answer to whatever question was foremost on his mind. He had this feeling when he and his siblings were living just off Lousy Lane, and he solved the murder of Uncle Monty with crucial information he discovered in a herpetological library. He had this feeling when he and his siblings were deep in the ocean, and he managed to dilute the poison infecting Sunny by finding a significant fact in a mycological library belonging to Fiona, a young woman who had broken Klaus's heart. And as he stood in the hallway gazing at all of the numbered doors that stretched out as far as his eyes could see, Klaus Baudelaire had the feeling again. Hidden somewhere in this hotel, he was sure, was something or someone that could answer all the Baudelaire's questions, solve all of the Baudelaire's mysteries, and put an end at last to all the Baudelaire's woes. It was as if he could hear this answer calling to him, like a baby crying at the bottom of a damp well, or an alarm clock ringing underneath a heap of damp blankets. Without a catalogue, however, Klaus had no idea where such a solution might be, so he made his way toward his concierge errand in room 674, hoping that whatever he would observe as a flâneur might bring him closer to unravelling the Baudelaire's list of misfortunes. When he stopped in front of the numbered door, however, it appeared that he was only adding another misfortune to this woeful list. Smoke was pouring out of the gap between the door and the floor, spreading out across the hallway like a sinister stain. "Hello?" Klaus called, knocking on the door.
"Hello yourself!"
called back a voice that sounded slightly familiar and utterly unconcerned.
"Are you one of those concertinas?"
"I'm a concierge," Klaus said, not bothering to explain that a concertina is a kind of accordion. "Can I be of assistance?"
"Of course you can be of assistance," the voice called back. "That's why I rang for you. Enter at once."
Klaus, of course, did not want to enter a room that was filled with smoke, but working, even for the purposes of secretly observing the mysteries of a hotel, usually means doing things you do not want to do. So the middle Baudelaire opened the door, releasing an enormous amount of smoke into the hallway, and took a few hesitant steps into the room. Through the smoke, he could see a short figure, dressed in a suit of shiny green cloth, standing at the far end of the room, facing the window. Behind his back, he held a cigar that was clearly responsible for all the smoke wafting past Klaus into the hallway. But Klaus did not care about the smoke. He hardly even noticed it. He merely stared in dismay at the person standing at the window, a person he had hoped he would never see again. You have probably heard that tiresome expression, "it's a small world," which people use to explain a coincidence. For instance, if you walk into an Italian restaurant and encounter a waiter you recognize, the waiter might cry, "It's a smaller world," as if it were unavoidable that the two of you would be at the same restaurant at the same time. But if you've ever taken even the shortest of walks, you know the truth of the matter. It is not a small world. It is a large world, and there are Italian restaurants sprinkled all over it, employing waiters who have crucial messages for you, and waiters who are trying to make sure you never receive them, and these pairs of waiters are engaged in an argument that began many years ago, when you were so young that it was not safe to feed you even the softest of gnocchi. The world is not small, but enormous, and Klaus had hoped that this enormous world was big enough that a guest of the Hotel Denouement, employed in the lumber industry and staying in room 674, would not be the horrid man who had employed him and his sisters at Lucky Smell's lumber mill. During their dreadful stay in Poultryville, the Baudelaires never saw the man's face, which was always covered by a cloud of smoke from his cigar, and they never learned the man's real name, which was so difficult to pronounce that he made everyone call him Sir. But they learned plenty about his greedy and cruel behaviour, and Klaus was not happy to learn that this enormous world was going to treat him to another helping of Sir's selfishness.
"Well, don't just stand there," Sir shouted. "Ask what you can do for me."
"What can I do for you, sir?" Klaus asked. Sir whirled around, and the cloud around his head whirled around too.
"How did you know my name?"
he asked suspiciously.
"The concierge didn't know your name,"
said another voice patiently, and Klaus saw through the smoke a second person he had not noticed, sitting on the bed in a bathrobe with Hotel Denouement embroidered on the back. This man was also familiar from the Baudelaire's days at Lucky Smell's, although Klaus did not know whether to be happy to see him or not. On one hand, Charles had always been kind to the children, and although his kindness had not been enough to save them from danger, it is always a relief to discover there is a kind person in the room that you had not noticed previously. On the other hand, however, Klaus was sorry to see that Charles was still partners with Sir, who enjoyed bossing around Charles almost as much as he did the Baudelaires.
"I'm sure the concierge calls all the male guests in this hotel Sir."
"Of course he does," Sir shouted. "I'm not an idiot. Now then, concertina, we want to be taken to the sauna right away."
"Yes, sir," Klaus said, grateful that either Frank or Ernest had mentioned that the sauna was in room 613. A sauna is a room constructed out of wood and kept very, very hot, in which people can sit in steam, which is believed to be beneficial to one's health, and Klaus would have found it very difficult to find such a room in the Hotel Denouement without a catalogue. "The sauna should be down the hall on the opposite side," Klaus said. "If you gentlemen will follow me, I'll take you there."
"I'm sorry we made you come all the way to our rooms just to take us right down the hall," Charles said.
"It's my pleasure," Klaus said. As I'm sure you know, when people say, "it's my pleasure," they usually mean something along the lines of, "there's nothing on earth I would rather do less." But the middle Baudelaire was hoping that he could learn why the Baudelaire's former guardian and his partner had journeyed from Poultryville to the Hotel Denouement.
"Let's go this very instant,"
Sir shouted, marching out into the hallway.
"Don't you want to change into a bathing suit?" Charles asked. "If you're fully clothed, you won't get the health benefits of the steam."
"I don't care about the health benefits of the steam," Sir shouted. "I'm not an idiot. I just love the smell of hot wood."
Charles sighed and followed Klaus out of room 674 and into the hallway.
"I was hoping my partner would relax during our stay here," he said, "but I'm afraid he's taking a busman's holiday."
Busman's holiday is an expression which refers to when people do the same thing on vacation that they do in their everyday lives, such as plumbers who visit the Museum of Sinks, or villains who disguise themselves even on their days off. But Klaus could not believe that these two men were merely vacationing in the Hotel Denouement just 2 days before VFD was to gather. "Are you here on business?" he asked, hoping that Charles would keep talking as they approached the sauna.
"Don't tell that concertina anything,"
Sir cried, continuing to use the word for accordion instead of the word for hotel employee.
"He's supposed to be at our beck and call, not nosing around in our business like a spy."
"Forgive me, sir," Klaus said, as calmly as he could.
"We've arrived at the sauna."
Sure enough, Klaus, Sir, and Charles had arrived at room 613, which had a mass of steam pouring out of the gap between the door and the floor,
like a mirror image of Sir's cigar smoke pouring out of room 674.
"You can wait outside, Concertina," said Sir. "We'll shout for you when we're ready to be escorted back to our room."
"We don't need to be escorted," Charles said timidly, opening the door. Inside, Klaus could see nothing but a mass of whirling steam. "It's just down the hallway. I'm sure the concierge has enough to do without waiting around for us."
"But someone has to hold my cigar," Sir shouted. "I can't walk into a room full of steam with a head full of smoke. I'm not an idiot."
"Of course not," Charles said with a sigh and walked into the sauna. Sir handed Klaus the cigar and strode into the sauna before the cloud of smoke around his head could clear. Behind him, the door started to close, but Klaus thought quickly and stuck out his foot. The door remained open just a crack, and as quietly as he could, he swung the door back open and slipped inside, pausing to balance Sir's cigar on the rim of one of the ornamental vases. As he suspected, the steam was so thick inside the sauna that he could not see Sir or his partner, which meant the Poultryville citizens could not see him either, while they sat and talked in the heated room. It was a flaneur's perfect opportunity to eavesdrop on a private conversation. "I wish you could be more polite," Charles said, his voice drifting through the steam. There was no reason to accuse that concierge of being a spy.
"I was just trying to be cautious," Sir said gruffly,
a word which here means in a tone that indicated he had no intention of being more polite. Klaus heard the crinkle of his shiny suit and imagined that the lumber mill owner was shrugging.
"You're the one who said enemies might be lurking in this hotel."
"That's what I was told in the letter I received," Charles said. "According to J.S., we must be very cautious if we want to find the Baudelaires." Klaus was grateful that his amazed expression was hidden in the steam. The middle Baudelaire could not imagine why the mysterious impostor J.S. was helping Charles find him and his sisters, and if it had not been so hot in the sauna, he would have broken out in a cold sweat, a phrase which here means felt very nervous about the conversation he was observing.
"I don't want to find the Baudelaires," Sir said. "Those orphans were nothing but trouble for the lumber mill."
"They weren't the cause of the trouble," Charles said. "Count Olaf was, don't you remember?"
"Of course I remember," Sir cried. "I'm not an idiot. Count Olaf disguised himself as a rather attractive young lady and worked with that sinister hypnotist to cause accidents in my mill. If the Baudelaires didn't have that fortune waiting for them in the bank, Olaf never would have done all that mischief. It's the orphans' fault."
"I suppose you're right," Charles said. "But I would still like to find them. According to the Daily Punctilio, the Baudelaires are in a heap of trouble."
"According to the Daily Punctilio," Sir said, "the Baudelaires are murderers. For all we know, that bookworm with the eyeglasses could sneak up on us right here in the hotel and kill us to death."
"The children aren't going to murder us," Charles said, "although after their experiences at Lucky Smells, I could hardly blame them. In fact, if I manage to find them, the first thing I'll do is give them my sincere apologies. Perhaps I can ask one of the concierges for a pair of binoculars. J.S. said they might be arriving by submarine, so I could watch for a periscope rising from the sea."
"I wish our room had a view of the pond instead," Sir said. "When I'm done with the cigar, I like to drop the butt into a calm body of water and watch the pretty ripples."
"I'm not sure that would be good for the pond," Charles said.
"What do I care about the pond?" Sir demanded. "I have better things to do than worry about the environment. The fine night forest is running low on trees, so business is bad for the lumber mill. The last big order we had was for building that horseradish factory, and that was a very long time ago. I'm hoping Thursday's cocktail party will be an excellent opportunity to do some business. After all, if it weren't for my lumber, this hotel wouldn't even exist."
"I remember," Charles said. We had to deliver the lumber in the middle of the night. But, sir, you told me you never heard from that organization again.
I didn't, sir said, until now. You're not the only one who gets notes from this fellow J.S. I'm invited to a party he's hosting on Thursday night, and he said I should bring all my valuables. That must mean plenty of rich people will be there, rich people who might want to buy some lumber.
Perhaps if the lumber mill becomes more successful, Charles said, we could pay our employees with money instead of just gum and coupons.
Don't be an idiot, sir said. Gum and coupons is a fair deal. If you spent less time reading and more time thinking about lumber, you'd care more about money and less about people.
There's nothing wrong with caring about people, Charles said quietly. I care about you, sir, and I care about the Baudelaires. If what J.S. wrote is true, then their parents...
Excuse me.
The door of the sauna swung open, and Klaus saw a tall, dim figure step into the steam.
Is that my concertina? Sir barked. I told you to wait outside.
No, I'm one of the managers of the hotel, said either Frank or Ernest. We do have a concertina available in room 786, if you're interested in musical instruments. I'm sorry to interrupt your afternoon, but I'm afraid I must ask all guests to vacate the sauna. A situation has arisen that requires the use of this room. If you're interested in steam, there's quite a bit of it in room...
I don't care about steam, cried Sir. I just like smelling hot wood. Where else can I smell hot wood except in the sauna?
Room 547 is dedicated to organic chemistry, replied the manager. There are all sorts of smelly things there.
Klaus quickly opened the sauna door and pretended to walk inside. I'd be happy to take our guests to room 547, he said, hoping to observe the rest of Sir and Charles's conversation.
No, no, the manager said. You're needed here, concierge. By a strange coincidence, there happens to be a chemist standing in the hallway who would be happy to escort these two gentlemen.
Oh, all right, Sir said,
and stomped out of the sauna, where a figure stood in a long white coat and a mask, such as surgeons or chemists wear over their noses and mouths. Sir reached down and picked up his cigar from the ornamental vase, restoring the cloud of smoke to his face just as the cloud of steam evaporated, and without another word, he and his partner followed the chemist away from the sauna, leaving Klaus alone with a volunteer or villain.
"Be very careful with this," said either Frank or Ernest,
handing a large, rigid object to Klaus. It was something flat and wide, rolled into a thick tube, like a sleeping bag.
When it's unrolled, the surface is very sticky. So sticky that anything it touches becomes trapped. Do you know what this is called?
Fly paper, Klaus said, remembering a book he had read about the adventures of an exterminator. Is the hotel having an insect problem?
Our problem is not with insects, the manager said. It's with birds. This is bird paper. I need you to attach one end to the windowsill of this room and dangle the rest outside over the pond. Can you guess why?
To trap birds, Klaus said.
You're obviously very well read, said Ernest or Frank,
although it was impossible to tell whether he was impressed or disgusted with this fact.
So you know that birds can cause all sorts of problems. For instance, I've heard about a swarm of eagles that recently stole a great crowd of children. What do you think of that?
Klaus gasped. He knew, of course, exactly what he thought of the great swarm of eagles who kidnapped a troop of snow scouts while the Baudelaires were living on Mount Fraught. He thought it was horrid, but the face on the volunteer or villain was so unfathomable that the middle Baudelaire could not tell if the manager thought so too. I think it's remarkable, Klaus said finally, carefully choosing a word which here means either wonderful or horrible.
That's a remarkable answer, replied either Frank or Ernest.
And then Klaus heard the manager sigh thoughtfully.
Tell me, he said, are you
who I think you are?
Klaus blinked behind his glasses, and behind the sunglasses that lay on top of them. Deciding on a safe answer to a question is like deciding on a safe ingredient in a sandwich, because if you make the wrong decision, you may find that something horrible is coming out of your mouth. As Klaus stood in the sauna, he wanted nothing more than to decide on a safe answer, such as, "Yes, I'm Klaus Baudelaire," if he were talking to Frank, or, "I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about," if he were talking to Ernest. But he knew there was no way to tell if either of those answers was safe, so he opened his mouth and uttered the only other answer he could think of. "Of course I'm who you think I am," he said, feeling as if he were talking in code, although in a code he did not know. "I'm a concierge."
"I see," said Frank or Ernest,
as unfathomable as ever.
"Ungrateful for your assistance, concierge. Not many people have the courage to help with a scheme like this."
Without another word, the manager left, and Klaus was alone in the sauna. Carefully, he walked through the steam and felt his way to the window, which he managed to unlatch and open, swinging a shutter marked 6 out over the pond. As will happen when a very hot room is exposed to cold air, the steam raced through the window and evaporated. With the steam gone, Klaus could see the wooden walls and benches that comprised the sauna, and he only wished that everything were as clear in his own head as it was in room 613. In silence, he attached one end of the bird paper to the windowsill, his head spinning with his mysterious observations as a flâneur and his mysterious errand as a concierge, and in silence he dangled the rest outside, where it curved stiffly over the pond like a slide at a playground. In silence, he gazed at this strange arrangement and wondered which manager had requested such an odd task. But before he could leave the sauna, Klaus's silence was shattered by an enormous noise. The clock in the lobby of the Hotel Denouement is the stuff of legend, a phrase which here means very famous for being very loud. It is located in the very center of the ceiling, at the very top of the dome, and when the clock announces the hour, its bells clang throughout the entire building, making an immense, deep noise that sounds like a certain word being uttered once for each hour. At this particular moment, it was 3 o'clock, and everyone in the hotel could hear the booming ring of the enormous bells of the clock, uttering the word 3 times in succession. Wrong, wrong, wrong. As he turned away from the sauna's open window and walked back down the hall toward the elevator doors, Klaus Baudelaire felt as if the clock was scolding him for his efforts at solving the mysteries of the Hotel Denouement. Wrong. He had tried his best to be a flâneur, but hadn't observed enough to know exactly what Sir and Charles were doing at the hotel. Wrong. He had tried to communicate with one of the hotel's managers, but had been unable to discover whether he was Frank or Ernest. And most wrong of all, he had performed his errand as a concierge, and now a strip of bird paper was dangling out of the Hotel Denouement, where it would serve some unknown, sinister purpose. With each strike of the clock, Klaus felt wronger and wronger, and as he stepped inside the small elevator, he frowned in thought. He dearly hoped his 2 siblings had found more success in their errands, for as he walked through the sliding doors and pressed the button to return to the lobby, all the middle Baudelaire could think was that everything was wrong, wrong, wrong.